Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, July 24th. I'm Ray Graff. It's time to garden. We welcome back Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. And it looks like Dale Isla brought some tomatoes. If you have a question about gardening, call now and get in line. It's a popular show. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Fred, Greg, Dale Isla, and your gardening calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Yeah, I never got choked up from a newscast before, but I think that was Mr. Pickus's last one. So well done there, I pick. He is leaving us tomorrow. This is Vox Pop, our afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today it's gardening. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery is here. Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. You got a question about stuff that grows? Maybe it looks a little funky or it's not doing so well. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, and we welcome your calls today. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. We already have a stack of those, but feel free, voxpop@wamc.org. It's 800-348-2551. Still a few open lines if you want to get in the queue right now. Hello, gardeners.
Hello.
Hey, good afternoon.
How's everybody doing?
Great.
Doing pretty well.
Yeah, really well.
How's Trix over at the Ward's Nursery?
You know, that cool weather was really nice, kind of stabilized, I think, everything. We're going to get a little warm now, but I think, you know, we can deal with it. We know what to do now because we've learned from the last 3 weeks about, you know, what's happening. You know, plants, they need water if they're newly planted, but anything you put in the last, like, 3 weeks and you've been watering them consistently but not overwatering them, we'll certainly get through this next little bit of heat that we're going to get.
Yeah, and it's, how hot is it right now out there?
It's not bad. It's about 85.
I got 90 on the gauge on my car. But
yeah, okay. City's 90.
Probably. Yeah, city's 90. Yeah. It feels hotter, honestly, because it's pretty humid out there. Things are really dry out there, too, which is hard to believe.
Yeah. So we had no rain last week? I was out of town.
Nothing that really added up to anything. At least we didn't get anything.
Depends where small. You are. We had 1.37 inches in an hour last
Sunday. Oh, that's not too bad. We had a little less than that. But the, you know, what happens with new plants that you've put in is you water them well, and then you wait and let the water sort of dissipate and drain, and the soil sort of retake in the air from the atmosphere so that the roots can actually, you know, quote, breathe a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you water again. So once you've done that and it's been a few weeks, when it gets hot, you don't have to get too carried away with that. You stay with that same method of, you know, every 5-7 days, a good soaking, let them go 5 or 7 days.
When you say soaking, how do we know we've soaked enough?
That is a great question.
That is a great question.
It's really hard to figure that out. But what you would do, so say, you know, it's an easy thing if you have a container. Say you have put a bunch of really fun annuals into a big 15-inch pot,
mm-hmm.
right? And you've got two or three things in there. So that's easy. You just get it wet. You let it run through. You get it wet again. You let it run through a couple times. You're done. You know, if you have really no idea how much you put in there. So you're trying to mimic that with something in the ground. So you could put a sprinkler up and just let it run for an hour or two, depending on...
That long?
Well,
wow.
It depends on the soil. How big the area is.
Yeah.
Or you could go out with your garden hose and be very specific with a nice, showery type of water emitter and just stand there by each plant and then do all 10 plants and then come back and do them all again and maybe a third time. That would be considered a really good watering. So if it's a 1 gallon plant, you'd be giving it 2 or 3 gallons. If it's a 10-gallon plant, you'd be giving it 20 gallons.
Well, we have a little pot with some tomatoes in it, and my wife said, oh, we need to get some water in this. And I offered to get a couple of shot glasses full. And she said that was not going to be enough.
That's not
going
to work.
No.
Yeah, you really have to saturate it down to the actual root zone. So if it's going to, you know, most feeder roots are going to be 12 to 15 inches under the soil surface. So you have to wet that soil enough that it penetrates 12 to 15 inches.
It's funny, two or three shots usually gets into my root zone pretty well.
Well, that's probably true, depending on what you're putting. No.
I didn't say that.
You didn't say that.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Gardening Show. Dale Isla, what's happening at the berry patch?
The berry patch is roaring. We've got a beautiful berry crop, and we're open on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays and doing pick your own. And we got all sorts of tomatoes pouring in, and the raspberries are starting, and the strawberries are coming back from summer vacation. Ripping.
You brought tomatoes.
I did. I brought, let's see, 5 varieties of heirlooms and a couple red tomatoes.
Now, is this heirloom business, are all heirlooms better than just your standard tomatoes?
I think a well-grown tomato, whether it be a hybrid red one or an heirloom, a well-ripened, well-grown tomato is fantastic. It doesn't have to be an heirloom.
Didn't we do tomato tasting and naming last year?
We've probably done it before, but a couple of these are new varieties, and there's never too much tomato tasting.
All right, let's find out how things are going at the Landis Arboretum, and then we'll get rolling here. Fred, how are things going over there?
We're growing over there all the time. So right now, you know, it's funny you say about, you know, planting. A lot of people think, well, it's, you know, first we had a really wet spring, and then we've had drought. I mean, we're actually really dry.
Yeah.
We've been putting in some new landscapes right now, and the soil that's coming up, I mean, out of that ground, out of that soil profile where the roots would be, is powder. It's bone dry.
Yeah.
And, you know, some fix, you know, can you plant during that kind of condition? And the answer to that is absolutely, as long as you can get water to it. If you can't get water to it, you're going to be better off waiting till fall. But we're water rich over at Landis Arboretum. So in terms of irrigating, we've got a little water wagon that we go around with. And one trick that we've done when we put new plants in the ground is we don't have time to really sit there and wait for the hose to drop 5 to 8 gallons or 10 gallons of water on a plant. So we've actually been using these 5-gallon pails and just punching a few small little tiny drill holes in them. Fill the container up, let it sit next to the root zone. We come back half an hour, 45 minutes later, it's well on its way to empty. But what that does is it just lets it trickle out so it gets right down to that root zone. And it's been working out pretty well. So we are planting right now and putting in some new landscapes and in two different areas. So lots of stuff going on. We're getting ready for a 5K race coming up in about 3 weeks.
Uh-oh. So are you going to run? Country.
I like to say I help run it, but I don't actually run it. But we got little Mikey there, my son, who's going to run it officially.
Oh, fantastic.
So, he ran it last year, and he won his age group, and he's planning to do the same thing this year. So.
You know, you probably pulled some strings over there so we could win, right?
No, we don't give him any breaks.
Hey. The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's do a few emails at voxpop@wamc.org. These have been coming in all day long. This one is from Alice in Ashby, and I already passed the picture around. Alice didn't follow the rules and sent a picture, which I can't show to anyone else except the people in this room. So let's not do that. But Alice wrote, this peach tree is about 15 years old. We spray it and an adjacent tree with dormant oil spray in the early spring and fertilized with a granular product following UMass Aggie standards. This spring, the tree in question was full of leaves and small fruit. Last year, this one had leaf curl disease. Then we had a major rain and windstorm and mid-spring that downed many leaves and fruit from only this tree. The few remaining fruit on the tree are shriveled, the other healthy with lots of ripening peaches. We don't know if the tree pictured will recover and or are there steps we can take to help it through the fall and winter. Officially, our town, Ashby, is Zone 6A, but I think our microclimate is 5B. And that's from Alice. All right, you've had a look at the picture. What do you think?
So, you know, overall, it doesn't look bad. It sounds like that tree took a little bit more of a beating for whatever reason than the other trees. That one may, you know, not have held on its fruit as good as the other ones did. But I personally don't think, and nothing in that photo makes me think it's really bad. It's, you know, I think it'll recover.
Okay.
What the photo shows is that the tree is definitely 15 years old.
Yeah, for sure.
It is an older tree.
It does.
That it has, you know, a fair amount of older wood on it.
It does.
And, you know, peaches really, you know, they produce on that first year wood, you know, the second year, but on that first year wood. So it's not a great time to be doing any severe pruning now, but maybe some more significant pruning in the spring, late spring, to bring the plant back to more to the center to create lots of new growth. The only other thing, too, is you can't see the base, right? So we don't know what's happening at the bottom at where it enters the soil. And certainly you want to have – all we can see is lawn here. So certainly you don't want to have all this lawn around each trunk. You would want to open that up maybe 2 or 3 or 4 feet across, make sure all the grass is missing, and then some kind of mulching material in a nice big circle around the tree.
Okay.
I think then it should kind of pop back.
It should. You know, when we say remove the soil, the turf, we don't mean get in there with a shovel and dig that all out, because a 15-year-old tree is going to have a ton of feeder roots that are all within that. They're basically co-mingled with the roots of the turf. So you would be better off trying to eliminate that turf in a different way. And one of the ways we've done it is just use a weed whacker.
Okay.
And we just burn it right to the ground, scalp it, we call it. Burn it right to the ground, and then you can apply 2.5 inches of mulch on that, and that should theoretically get rid of the turf and the competition, which is the turf grass competing with the root systems of that tree, should certainly give it a better chance.
All right, let's try to blast through a couple more emails here before the first break, and the number is 800-348-2551. We'll get to the calls after the break. Ann in Adams writes, "Hello, garden gurus. I've planted yarrow, echinacea, and bee balm many, many times, and they never come back the second year. Everything else comes back, daylilies, daisies. I'm so frustrated. Could it be my soil is too acid? I just got a soil tester, but haven't used it yet." And that's from Ann in Adams.
Yeah, if you make a garden, so you turn over some soil to a shovel's depth or ideally better, and you work in some compost into that soil, 20-30%, as we've been saying, and then you plant these plants, you mulch the soil when you're done, and as we were talking about before, water on a regular basis, those plants should be able to establish all perfectly hardy things she just mentioned.
They're all tough ones.
Echinacea especially is a very hardy one. So,
boy, our bee balm is doing phenomenally well.
Those all do well. That once they're established, they almost never even need watering. I mean, they can tolerate drought. They tolerate tough soil. So the only thing I could say is that, kind of along with Greg said, did they water it when they established them? Did it get dried out? Did they make it through the winter?
Okay.
And if they did that, they should come back.
Every summer, every fall, every winter is different. And, we can just go back to last fall being very dry. So any new plants put in last summer could have been stressed from the 3 months of drought and then gone into winter and not been able to return. But that's hopefully not going to happen.
All right. 30 seconds here. Fred, are you feeling like a quick lightning round answer? We're 30 seconds from the break.
Let's go for it.
This is from Linda. Trim an arborvitae. How do you do it properly?
So you want to just make sure that the top part of the shrub is more narrow than the bottom part. And the reason for that is you'll shade the bottom part off, and then you'll lose branches at the bottom. It'll start getting thin. So the top's a little bit narrower than the bottom.
Yeah.
And otherwise, this time of year is okay. Just get your classic head shear out. And if you're, have a pretty good eye, it's not very hard to do. So pretty straightforward.
Breglia, that's the shortest answer you've ever given. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's The Gardening Show. We'll get to the calls in a moment. Base hit. That's Dizzy Gillespie and company here. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Gardening Vox Pop. Great to see this crew. I was on vacation last time you did it, and I think the time before that, my daughter was graduating from high school. So it's been about a month since I've seen you, and you all look fabulous. All right, let's tell you what. Let's grab a call, and then we're going to try some tomatoes here. Let's go to Jane in Livingston Manor. Jane, how are you doing? It's a little loud. Are you on a spaceship of any kind?
Is that any better?
That's okay. Go ahead with your question, and then we'll pot you down on the board here. Go ahead.
Okay. My question is, in my flower garden, I am absolutely infested with Japanese beetles. And when I go to anybody else to their gardens on our road, they have a few, but not nearly as many as me, and it feels like somebody's playing a cruel joke on me or something. I probably handpick 200 or 300 a day.
First of all, I'd like to say thank you very much for picking that many beetles. It's really helpful, you know, because they're just going to go out there and lay eggs again for next year. The good news is that probably another 10 days, they'll be mostly done.
Really? Yep.
There won't be any more beetles to worry about until next year.
Yep.
Amazing.
Other than that, usually the people who have a lot of beetles have a lot of open pasture or lawn around them because that's pretty much where they're coming from. And so if your neighbors or friends are tucked more in the woods or in small neighborhoods, they may not have as many beetles. Also, they're just cyclical. It's some years they're really heavy in one spot and not in another, and then it switches.
Yeah. All right.
You could apply, since it is Japanese beetles, and if this has been going on for many years, and you know you kind of see this kind of reoccurring, then they do make a product called milky spore disease, which is basically a fungus that you're going to inoculate your lawn with. And that is only going to target Japanese beetle grubs, but it would target the larva stage of that. And is it going to give you 100% control? Absolutely not. Is it going to help? It would. And it takes a few years to establish it. And once you have it there, unless you apply something like fungicides to your property, you're not going to have to reapply it. So okay. I'd like to say it's a lifetime application if you do, as long as you don't do anything to hurt it. And that could reduce the amount of Japanese beetles that you get. Might be worth it if it's something that kind of you see year, you know, kind of almost every year.
All right, Jane, thank you so much. A noisy call there, but we got it, and I hope you got your answer quickly before the next one. Give me a quick explanation and identification of what tomatoes we have here, Dale Isla Riggs.
Okay, so the one that is golden with a red blush is called Harvest Moon. That's a newer
this guy
variety.
Looks like a peach in a way?
Yes, it kind of does.
Should we try it?
Called what?
Harvest Moon. Harvest Moon.
Okay. All right.
That one.
That is a good one. I did try that first. That's a tasty one.
Very
good.
Very nice, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So you said, here's the salt. You brought a salt shaker.
Right. Absolutely.
I couldn't really see the salt. They're liberally salted, but it's very good. It's very good. That was delicious.
Yes. And then the very golden one is called...
This guy? Or this guy?
That guy. That's pure dark yellow. That's called persimmon, and that's one of my favorites. That was actually selected by Thomas Jefferson in 1781.
Oh, wow. It's an old one.
So it is a true heirloom. It's been around for over a couple hundred years.
It's very, very meaty.
Very, very meaty. Yeah. Hardly any seeds. Really great for tomato sandwiches.
I was just going to say, put it on a grilled cheese and go to town.
Yes. Yeah.
That sounds good.
All right, we'll try a couple more in a little bit. Let's go back to our calls. The lines are loaded. 800-348-2551. Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch is here. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. It's gardening, don't you know? Aaron is in Amsterdam. Aaron, go ahead. Hello, Aaron.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Oh, hi, sorry about that.
No problem.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is about deciduous plants for a type of a hedgerow. We have about 100 feet in what looks to be zone 5B, and we used to have a hedgerow there. It was overgrown with lots of invasive plants and different things. So it was taken out all the way down to the roots. And now we'd like to plant something back in there. What was there before was very fast growing. We could cut it down and it would grow back several feet every season. And so I would like some recommendations. I have no idea what was there before. And I'm just looking for some recommendations on different plant types that grow well, quickly, and can kind of fill in nicely over the summer months.
Yep.
Does it have a, do you have a certain height requirement?
No, not a particular height requirement. I think, you know, I'd like to see at least 3 or 4 feet. It could go as high as it wants. We have a 6-foot fence next door that would be great if we could cover most of looking at that.
Is it
so
sunny?
You know, 3 to 6 feet.
Did you say if it was sunny or not?
Of a height for, yes, very sunny, fully open backyard space.
Mm-hmm. And you can let you intend to shear it and control it, or you want to let it be a little wild?
I would rather just kind of do either once or twice a season, spring or fall, kind of a cutback, and then just let it go for the rest of the summer. There's plenty of other yard work to keep us busy. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a groomed hedge. Something maybe not like a boxwood, but maybe with something a broader leaf than that.
Yep. So I could tell you what my own personal favorite is, which is not listed really for hedges for the most part, but I could tell you absolutely it works like a charm. And I've got it in front of my own house, and I had it in front of my mom's house growing up. It's a common lilac. Common lilac is a fantastic plant for hedges. It's deciduous. It likes the sun. It will get nice and flower for you, but if you do shear it, you got to shear it right after they bloom. If you're trying to get flowers to continue to bloom on it, we really don't worry about it so much for the flowers. We just maintain it as a block from the road and the neighbors, and it works, you know, like a charm for that. And it gets to be, you know, like a lilac. It'll be, you know, easily, right now it's probably 10, 12 feet tall. And I cut it back once a year, only once a year. And we generally cut it back like, you know, 3 feet off of it every year. And I shear it so that it's also not super wide. And I don't do a real fancy job on it. I kind of just quick with a, you know, a battery powered hedge trimmer, and it works like a charm. There's a lot of other things out there that you could use. Privet is an old standard that's, you know, worked for years. There's a lot of other varieties, but I personally like lilac for that. It's just one of those ones you don't see, and I've had countless people say, what kind of hedge is that? You know, what is that you have growing there? And when you tell them lilac, you know, it's just one of those plants that isn't listed in that way, but it works well.
Okay.
We have a couple hedgerows at our place and have gone kind of the more wild route. And we actually have some really nice witch hazel, which are kind of nice because they put out flowers, their flowers in the fall, and they don't get too tall. Also, some viburnum, high bush cranberry is good. We have some forsythia, and we have amelanchier, which is really nice for wildlife habitat and birds. Mm. So those are some things that you could think about also.
All right, Aaron.
Yeah. And then, you know, a few different things that, you know, sort of so similar to what they mentioned. But in terms of a viburnum that is sort of hedgeable or trimmable every year that works well is the arrowwood viburnums. Viburnum dentatum works quite well as a, you know, sort of monoculture hedge. Stays full but could easily tolerate being pruned back heavily once a year. For lilac, there's a shorter version of Miss Kim lilac that, you know, kind of tops out at about 6 or 7 feet. So if you didn't want something a little shorter in a lilac, it blooms a little bit later, stays pretty full to the ground. And then a nice kind of fairly slow but really fun plant that could be a hedge and would also, again, top out maybe even a little bit shorter, maybe in the 5-6 foot range, is a plant called Fothergilla, which is a type of witch hazel or in the witch hazel family that stays very full to the ground, as I said, has really fantastic fall color, blooms in May. I don't think the bloom is anything to write home about, but it's not terrible.
No, it's pretty
white,
cool.
Sort of bottle brush flower.
It is like a bottle brush flower.
You know, there's lots of other fun things. You know, a mixed hedgerow, as Dale said, like, so mixing up the plants, you know, usually if you're mixing them, you're not going to be doing a lot of pruning every year. You're going to sort of let them go and then maybe do a renovation every 5 years or something to keep it under control. So mixing the species is really fun, too.
It's the Vox Pop Gardening Show. The number is 800-348-2551. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs join us. We'll go to Knox in a moment. But one more tomato here, Dale Isla. What should we try?
Well, I think you should try Dale Isla's Delight.
Which one's that?
That is the one that is kind of
this guy
deep
here?
Golden,
yeah.
Olive green.
Okay.
So wait a minute. You've got to name a tomato?
Yes, because I discovered it as a mutation, and awesome. I've been refining it for the last 10 years.
It's got a little zing. Oh, I like it. Yeah, Dale Isla's Delight.
Yeah, I think
I'd choose that one for the sandwich.
I kept it because it
that
has such
really
good
nice.
Flavor.
Really
yeah.
nice.
Good job. And are all these available at the Berry Patch?
Yes, they are.
Really?
So right here we have 3 yellows, we have a red, we have a pink, and we have a purple.
Okay.
And we have a couple other purples.
And this is the purple here. I want to try that one next.
Yes.
Let's go to Mike in Knox. Mike, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, I have a question for Dale Isla. I know she's touched on this over several shows, but I now have pen and paper ready. If you could pick one variety for the home gardener of each of these, blueberries, strawberries, and raspberries, what one variety would you pick for the small home gardener?
So during the last show, we did blueberry tasting, and everybody loved Blue Ray. And it's too bad that Ray wasn't here to try his namesake, blueberry.
Okay.
But that one, it's very productive. It's nice big berries. It's easy to grow. It's mid-season, and it just tastes really great. So I would do Blue Ray for a blueberry.
Okay.
For strawberry, I would do something. If you want an ever-bearing one, I would do Seascape. And if you want a June-bearing one, that's where a mix is really nice to kind of spread the season out a little bit more. That one, I would say Jewel would be one of the premier ones for a home gardener. Very, very reliable and really nice fruit. And a raspberry, again, it comes down to whether you want a summer-bearing raspberry or a fall-bearing raspberry. If you do a fall-bearing raspberry, I would do Crimson Treasure, which is a newer variety that was released by the Cornell Breeding Program. And for a summer variety, it's a really old one, but it's really reliable, and that is called Latham.
Latham?
Latham.
Is it in honor of Bob Graves?
I don't know where that name came from.
I don't know. All right, Mike, does that work for you?
That does. And one other thing, if I may, Ray, a suggestion for a future show.
Yeah.
During the pandemic, there was a lot of home chicken people that started getting chickens.
Right.
If you could ever have a chicken show, that would be great.
Well, you know, Shannon Hayes is coming on next Friday. We're going to do a show about eggs, but I think she could probably take a chicken question as well. So if you want to call back a week from tomorrow, feel free, buddy. But thank you for the call today. 800-348-2551. Stephanie is in Red Hook. Stephanie, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have I had an installation done about a month ago, a month and a half ago, and it was called Forester grasses and a handful of cedars. And when I went to put the soaker hose around the base of each of the plants, I noticed that the landscaping company did not put any amended soil, around the plant. And we have very rocky clay soil. And there was very little I could do about that. They gave me one day's notice, and I wasn't able to be here when they did it. And so I'm watering, and I'm watering, and, you know, all of the grasses, half of them are all flopped over. And I don't know if the clay soil is going to hold the water, or if there's no room for the roots to really penetrate. I'm watering and I'm trying to chat them up and be positive to them, but I don't know if they're going to survive.
Yep. So as a general rule, and you said there were some cedar trees too? Some cedar?
Yeah, three evergreen trees.
Three
evergreens. The cedar.
White cedar or red cedar? I mean, it doesn't matter much for the question, but just curious.
It's kind of blue. It's white. Actually, it's white.
White cedars. All right. So, contrary to what a lot of folks think, and I see a lot of people get in trouble with this, is when they, you know, have a rocky clay soil in particular, and then they install some trees, and then they don't like the look of that soil. So, because it's rocky and it's compacted and it's clay. So they amend it with lots of good organics, and then the plant does well. And then 10 years from now, the plant's got a lot of problems. It has a lot of root dysfunction. And the reason why it does is because if the hole is filled with really good soil, the roots want to stay in that soil. They don't want to go and grow through concrete, clay, and rock. So ultimately, what we recommend is actually taking out whatever comes out of that hole and putting it all back in. And if you want it to amend it a little bit, we say never more than 20% volume back in. So 20% of any other good mix back in. And honestly, you know, at the Arboretum, most of the time we plant and we have a rocky clay soil. And, you know, we generally, whatever comes out, we take the big rocks out, we take the sod chunks out, but all that soil goes back in. And, you know, we very rarely lose a plant. And it's never because it's of the soil.
Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, long term, you actually might be better.
Right.
As long as they're planted correctly. And, you know, it's all about the depth. when it comes to planting, especially trees, but any plant, if it's too deep, it'll have a problem. If
right.
it's right at grade, so if you see their, you know, where they planted them and you can see their root flare, kind of like right. where the trunk meets the roots, and that's right at ground level, then yeah. it sounds like you're actually probably in pretty good shape. And, you know, just keep an eye on the water, because okay. just like you said, if you do overwater it, can you drown a plant? You certainly can. And some plants don't like waterlogging. Other plants do. White cedars can certainly tolerate more water. So, you know, ultimately, I think you're going to be okay. You guys want to comment on that?
Yeah, I would. Just continuing on the cedar thing, did they leave some retaining berm or a little circular dam around each cedar tree, or are they in a close row?
Well, they're not cedar trees. They're shrubs.
Shrubs, okay.
So are they in a shrub yeah. bed, or are they individually planted in the lawn?
They're actually in a long bed along the whole side of the house. So it's Carl Forrester grasses.
Yeah, okay.
And then three intermittent shrubs.
So this is a foundation planting that they planted in your original soil. They did not amend any of that soil at all.
They did not amend any of it.
Yeah, so
I'm more concerned with the Carl Forrester
right.
plants that yeah. half of the grasses are all flopped over.
Right. So that's a different thing. So I think that, as Fred said, that's fine. Getting that soaker hose around them, those things put out a lot of not much water over a long period of time. So letting that run for a few hours, like 3 or 4 hours, to make sure, and then trying to test to see if the ground is moist everywhere would be great. And so I think those cedars are going to be fine. So Carl Forrester is finished doing all of its original spring work now. So they're a cold weather grass. So they come up early in May, and then they flower, and then they look really fun by the end of June, and then they they're sort of done right now. So if they were planted just recently, they're already done. So the best thing to do with those is to cut them in half. And then just wait for brand new leaves to come up.
All right, we're overdue for a break, but Dale Isla, did you want to add anything to that?
I would just make sure you add some nice compost or bark mulch or something for organic matter that the worms will incorporate to the soil over time.
Okay, let's take a quick break. Stephanie, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gardening Today, we'll be back. Nothing says digging in the dirt like some good old prog rock. There's King Crimson on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. All right, we're going to go to West Haven, Vermont, and have a tomato question in a moment. But first, Dale Isla Riggs from Berry Patch. Which of these are we going to try?
The purple one, the Marnero.
This guy?
Yes.
All right. Oh, I love the look of this.
Yes. It's one of my favorite looking ones.
I love this one. Maybe because I put a tablespoon of salt on it. Oh, the blood pressure is going up.
Nice and
delicious.
Juicy.
Yeah.
Nice flavor. Really pretty color.
What's the name of that?
Marnero.
I like it.
Similar texture to the Dale Isla tomato.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. More, it's softer, more tender, which is classic for an heirloom.
Yep.
All right. While we're on the topic of tomatoes, let's go to West Haven, Vermont. Susan is on. Susan, go ahead.
Thanks, guys. I am growing cherry tomatoes, and something is starting to eat the leaves at the top. I suspected tomato hornworms, but I can't find a hornworm. I can't find hornworm eggs under the leaves, so I'm kind of flummoxed at what is happening.
Yes, tomato hornworms are eating our cherry tomatoes as well, and you can... Is there any frass on the ground?
What's frass?
I'm not seeing. Is that poop?
Yes, hornworm poop.
I'm not seeing anything.
Okay, that's what to look is what you should be looking for. If you're finding that, you definitely have hornworms because they are really hard to find in the foliage. If you wind up with some hornworm, ours are actually dying naturally from a natural fungus that's out there. Or there's also a parasitic wasp that's a natural predator, or you can apply BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, and that's a microbial insecticide. Yeah. But if it's eating it from the top and all the leaves are disappearing and leaving you stems, that is tomato hornworm for sure.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I just can't find them.
They're big and they're hard to find.
Yeah.
They are. Yeah. They're the same color. And I got to say, I've looked at them myself over the years, and you're like, it's got to be here. And places that you've already looked, you went right over it. And then you go back real slow.
Yeah, okay.
Real slow, and all of a sudden, oh, there it is.
Look in the shady spots if it's midday.
Yeah, true.
They don't want to be out in the full sun.
Oh, yeah, under the, okay.
Yeah, under.
Well, thank you very much. Yep.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Now we go over to Brian in Poughkeepsie. Hello, Brian. How are you? Brian, have you nodded off, buddy? Hello. All right. Well, thank you, Brian. I appreciate it. Yeah, let's go to Ulster. Ted, I know you're awake. Hello, Ted. You're on.
Hi. Thinking about doing raised beds in the old chopping bags and possibly boxes.
Okay.
Topsoil. Should I get a cubic yard or better go with the bags of topsoil?
Well, you know, when I hear that question, I always say topsoil is not created equal. And you'd be surprised how much of a variation you get from one bag to one company, from one site, from one landscaper. So I would say if you're going to do a raised bed, spend a little bit more time doing research on the topsoil. Like you really want to try to get a good topsoil. It's easy to get a degraded product. It's a little bit more challenging to find a really good topsoil, but that little bit of extra time is going to pay off. And you know, most landscape companies sell it. I know I've got a few different sources out our direction by the Arboretum. We've been buying it from time to time for landscape projects, and you know, I've seen a lot of variation. So you know, take a little time to figure that out. The other question I would say is, you know, if your soil is good on site, do you need a raised bed? There's advantages to raised beds, and there's disadvantages. And they heat up faster, which can be an advantage, but it can also be a disadvantage. And they dry out quicker, too. So some sites are just really bad. I've lived in apartments in the past, and the only way we could have a garden is a raised bed. It was like, you know, subsoil. And then other places, it's not so bad. So if you're in a bad site, bad soil, then, you know, raised bed's key. You know, it can help a lot.
Exactly. But next question.
Yep.
What's the best at this point in the year? Can I? I'd like to plant black beans or lima beans or something food, most protein, and possibly also butterfly garden in a few of the bags. But will boxes hold the soil just for 2 or 3 months, or can I go for regular shopping bags made out of recycled plastic?
If they're going to use small containers like that, I wonder if you shouldn't use more of a sort of a well-drained potting soil. A shopping bag isn't a very large container. Not sure that's, you're going to certainly want to make sure it drains as well, put some holes in the bottom of it. It's getting a little late for beans. I put in some green beans 2 weeks ago, and they're looking great, and I'm hoping to have some for September. My June 1st crop is being harvested now. So you need about, 50 good days, and we don't really have that many left. But to do a pollinator garden, there's plenty of, all the garden centers would have plenty of plants for you to choose from.
All right, Ted, thanks a lot for the call. Now we'll go to Ryan. Ryan, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Seekonk.
Oh, I where is that? I don't know this town in Mass.
Massachusetts, south of Boston, kind of between Boston and Providence, close to the Providence.
I thought it was way out there. Okay, man, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Got it. So I have I got some raspberries from a friend. They kind of cut them, dug them out of their garden, I got four sticks, I'd say maybe a little smaller than a finger. They had about 10, 15 leaves on them. I planted them right in the ground, full sun, and they immediately just started kind of the leaves burnt up, shriveling. They haven't dropped the leaves, but they're clearly not tolerating the sun. I'm thinking maybe they didn't have them in full sunlight. So I'm keeping them watering every day. I'm just wondering when do I cut my losses and try to get them out.
What do you think, Dale Isla?
I would say just have some patience. I mean, they obviously went through some significant shock, and it sounds to me like maybe there wasn't enough roots transferred with the pieces. But, you know, what's happening underground can be very different versus above ground. And I'd say give them the season and see if they come back next spring. If they don't, you can put new ones in next spring.
Oh, yeah, I think that you might see some new leaves coming out of the ground in the next few weeks.
Yes, that's true.
Fred?
No, I think we're good.
All right, Ryan, you want to follow up very quickly?
No, that sounds hopeful. I appreciate the advice. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. All right, Dale Isla, what about another tomato?
Okay, so I don't think you have had the pink one yet.
This guy?
Yes.
All right.
Is this the pink one?
No, that's the red one.
I need the pink one.
I'm a little colorblind myself here. Which one? This one?
That's the pink one, yes.
Let's hand this one over to Greg, vessel.
That one is called Damsel, and that is the last of the heirloom varieties that I brought today.
I did not try that one
yet,
so we'll pass it over this way after Greg. Thank you.
So Damsel's a really nice, tender, nice medium-sized tomato.
Juicy and delightful.
Very juicy.
Pink one, right? We're doing the pink one?
Yes.
You have so many choices. How do you pick which tomatoes you're going to go for each season?
We only go for ones that taste good.
However, there's got to be at least 100.
Yeah.
At least 100.
Oh, thousands.
Probably
thousands.
1,000.
But not at the berry patch in any season.
No, but we have probably 15 or 20.
Oh, so good. All right, this email from Carlene. We have a large mixed cluster of woodland sunflowers and ironweed next to our house that need to be moved as they are taking over America. When is the best time to move them? They are just starting to bloom. Also, do they prefer full sun or partial shade? Right now, they're in partial shade, and that's from Carlene.
I think if they're looking really good and they're in partial shade, that sounds like what you should continue to do. You know, they can certainly take full sun. They just don't usually like a lot of shade. Both of those plants are typically referred to as full sun plants.
Yep.
You know, as she said, they're just coming into bloom. So why would you want to move them now unless you have no other choice? I would let them bloom. And then, you know, they'll all sort of finish up probably by late August, which is a perfect time to cut them back,
dig
them up, divide them, and replant them by early September, usually at the latest, to allow them to all settle in and root in for the winter.
Yep.
All right. One more email, then we'll jump back to the phones here. So many. And I apologize in advance to everybody who emailed and called. We're doing the best we can here. There's a lot of activity today. Pamela in Troy writes, "Greetings, gurus. During one of the last gardening shows, I was told that the weird berries, which had developed on my shad blow, service berry, sent a picture, and they had fungus. Unfortunately, you nice folks didn't tell me what to do about the fungus. Anything I can do or should do? Preventive measures next spring? What's up? What do I do?"
Yeah, so nothing you can do this time of year. It's, you know, the fungus is there. It's completely got them if they're still even on the plant. Next year, you could do something preventatively. There are fungicides. There are things you can do. Dormant oils would probably help. That's what I would probably start with. It isn't the apple family. Most of the time, you know, that should usually cure it enough. If you're going to eat it, I don't like to spray anything other than, you know, oils generally.
And this was shad, right?
Shad blow service berry.
I think it was weather related. I probably would not worry about it. And because usually the birds eat them way before you ever get
That's
them.
Correct. Usually it's not a problem. It's just this year is just a banner.
Very wet.
Perfect storm with wet spring and humid, hot summer.
And last email for now. Can you transplant a rhododendron at this time of year?
You know, it's going to be hot this week, but usually what you're looking for is for that second set of growth, which is happening now, to stop growing, no longer look soft. The buds are firm. The leaves are turgid, which means nice and full of water and not looking soft. And at that point, yes, you can dig it up. They have a really great fine root system. You kind of make a big pan out of it, very shallow but very wide, and you can pop them out and pop them back in.
Okay.
I would definitely wait for some cooler weather, maybe some damp weather that in August sometime.
That's what I would suggest as well. And, you know, they are one of those plants that transplants well. It's you know, some things just dig real nice, and rhododendrons just have that kind of quality with its root system. They like to be moved. They can be moved and pretty easily. So.
All right, let's go to Barbara in Wilbraham. Barbara, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
My problem is moss. We've lived here about 20 years, and initially there was some moss around the yard, but no big deal. We put raised beds in immediately, and last year one of my raised beds was full of moss. Went to the garden center, got something to kill it. They said, take the moss away. I did that. This year, not only do I have some moss in all the raised beds, but I have moss in the paths between them. Uh-oh. What am I doing wrong?
How much sun is
That's
are
what
you
I was
getting?
Gonna say.
Full sun. Full sun in my raised beds area.
Well, it makes me think the pH is probably more acidic then, because that moss, people struggle to get moss to grow.
Really?
Generally.
Yeah, usually moss likes it when the nutrient value is also poor. So so a heavy clay soil, a soil that doesn't drain well, is where moss likes to grow, because, and also nothing else wants to grow there. So the soil in your raised beds, you can definitely affect by amending that soil, by adding a bunch of compost, turning that over when you're done this year, so that because the moss is really not going to like that. And this cultivating in general is going to work. To me, having moss in the paths sounds like a good idea.
Really?
I like moss in the paths, but in the beds, not so much. So, you know, it's simple enough to get a soil test, a pH test on that. And you could, if you're in, are you in New York State?
No, Mass.
Mass. In New York.
Massachusetts.
So if you can send it out to like a university. I know in New York, you don't have to be from New York to do it.
UMass Extension.
Or the U.S. Extension has that there too.
Yep.
So you want to take it to one of those colleges that tests the fertility, and, you know, put down what you're trying to grow and have them do a fertility test plus pH test. And I'll bet you that it's probably going to come back fairly acidic and maybe not so fertile. So amending and adjusting the pH could just solve the problems in the planting beds. That might just solve it for you.
Yeah, I'm guessing that you're probably just going to need to add a bunch of lime to get the pH up.
Probably.
All right, Barbara, thanks a lot. One more tomato here to try, Delilah Riggs. What is this one?
And that is the last one. That's a red variety called Red Mountain.
Okay.
So that is a hybrid. And, you know, there's a lot of people that say, oh, I won't eat red tomatoes. I don't want hybrids.
Why?
I only want heirlooms. I think a well-grown red tomato tastes just as great as any great heirloom.
I think your namesake is pretty good. And I think Thomas Jefferson's is pretty
That's
darn good.
That's a really good one, too.
Yeah, the persimmon's really nice.
All right. Go ahead. Greg, are you going to say something? Oh, you going to talk with
Delicious.
Your mouthful? Okay, fair enough. All right, one more call here, and then we're going to wrap it up. Tony is in Adams. Tony, you have about 30 seconds, buddy.
All right, I'll make it quick. I have a crabapple tree that I planted almost 40 years ago. And over the last 5 years, I've been doing battle with shoots coming up near the base. I cut them, I seal them, and this is occurring 3 times a year. I am tired of losing the battle.
Yep. Oh, so you know, and that some varieties are indeed going to send up a lot more suckers than other varieties. So that we do see with certain ones. That being said, right in the spring, early on, first I would say when you're cutting back, make sure you're cutting them back all the way to the ground, not leaving little stubs when you cut them back. That'll make it worse. So cut them, and you might need to use a heavier duty cutter if you do have woody stubs. Cut them right down to the ground. And then once you've done that, in the spring when they start to come, one little trick that I've used, especially on these heavy suckering plants, is I just get a work glove, and when they first start to come up, they're really soft and really succulent, and you can get a work glove and kind of just smear them all around and break them all, and that cuts down a dramatic amount of everything that's going to be coming back next. And, you know, other than that, I think, you know, it's kind of a constant thing, but make sure you're cutting them all the way down to the ground. That's going to make a difference. think you can do it. I think that'll help a lot.
Tony, thanks a lot. Fred Breglia, how do people find out more about the Landis Arboretum?
Yep, so we're at landisarboretum.org for our website, and we're located at 174 Lape Road in Esperance.
Lovely Esperance. Dale Isla Riggs, the Berry Patch.
TheBerryPatch.net, and we're at 15589 State Route 22 in Steventown.
Keep cranking out those tomatoes. You're doing good work. Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah, Ward's Nursery's in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, 600 South Main Street, and we have a website, wardsnursery.com.
All right, all. Well, thank you. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum at Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley, working with individuals, businesses, and nonprofits to help make more good possible throughout the Hudson Valley. CommunityFoundationsHV.org. Once again, thanks to Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, and Greg Ward for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we'll explore the exciting, dynamic world of cold canning with cookbook authors Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough. Cold canning. Mark your calendars. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.